The shark, babe, has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white.
Sunday, 28 September 1959, Bedsanger School, Kent. Important news. There's going to be a general election on Thursday, 8 October. We are going to have a mock election at school, and I am going to be the Liberal candidate. Our message is, people count. We are going to win. Friday, 9 October 1959. We lost the election quite badly. The Conservatives won. Labour came second. We came third. Mr. Harold Macmillan, Super Mac, is back as Prime Minister. I think we fought the best campaign, but the people were not listening to us. And tomorrow we have a run. This has not been my lucky week.
What do you think was the single most important issue which has decided this campaign?
Well, I think the two great issues were, should this country be run with a sound economic policy? Second issue has, I think, been that they have felt there is a hope of a break in the clouds in the foreign fields.
Thursday, 10 October 1963, Bedell School. The Prime Minister has resigned. The Conservative Party is in a state of confusion, high drama, much excitement. And I have Latin, German, maths this morning, followed by gym. Sunday, 13 October 1963. News of the week. The Conservative Party is in conference in Blackpool and running riot. Everybody wants to be the next leader. Lord Hume, the Foreign Secretary, is emerging as the unexpected favourite. He may have a lisp and a face like a skull. Think of an albino version of the green Mekon in Dan Dare and the Eagle. But he is a gentleman to his fingertips, and I reckon could turn out to be our man.
Do you know how the other half lives?
Well, of course, I think this is inverted snobbery to begin with, and secondly, I reject the proposition there are two halves of the nation. When I was in Parliament, I represented a constituency where there were miners. I lived among miners for 20 years. I'm a farmer. I know all about the work on the farms. No, it's certainly untrue. I don't know how the people live. Of course I do.
Saturday, 19 October 1963. The 14th Earl of Hume has kissed hands with Her Majesty on his appointment as Prime Minister. The Queen chose him on the advice of Mr. Macmillan, having taken soundings from Sir Winston Churchill and others. Unlike the Labour Party, the Conservative Party does not elect its leader. He emerges after consultation within the party. Friday, 28 February 1969, Oxford. Not my finest hour. I was at St. Anne's with my girlfriend Michelle, lying on her bed, feeling sick. At 5 p.m, I was due in the Red Room at New College to be in the lineup for the sherry party to meet the Right Honourable Edward Heath MP, leader of Her Majesty's loyal opposition and my hero. At 4:30, I said to Michelle, I'm not well enough, I can't face it. At 4:45 p.m, I changed my mind and decided that it was important to go. I ran all the way. I burst through the door of the Red Room and joined the end of the line just as the great man was being brought down it. As he shook my hand and heaved his shoulders, I heaved mine and threw up all over his brown suede shoes. Yes, I met the leader of the Conservative Party and literally vomited as I did so. I made my excuses and left. I ran straight back to Michelle and bizarrely felt much better. It's now 1 a.m. and I feel utterly fine. Saturday, 22 January 1972. This is an historic day. The Prime Minister Edward Heath has signed the Treaty of Brussels. After a decade of difficult negotiations, Britain, Ireland, Denmark and Norway have now joined the European Economic Community, enlarging it from 6 nations to 10. And where am I on this momentous day? As it happens, on the train to Cheltenham. I'm on my way to the Everyman Theatre to see Cyril Fletcher in Mother Goose.
Je suis convaincu que nous vivons un moment historique comparable à celui d'il y a 20 ans. Car il est certain que les décisions que nous prendrons tous dans les semaines à venir seront déterminantes pour l'avenir politique de l'Europe.
Wednesday, 5 February 1975. It's all over for Ted Heath. The poor man, my sometime hero, has been trounced in the first round of the ballot for the leadership of the Conservative Party. 119 for Mr. Heath, 130 for Mrs. Thatcher. It's not over yet. William Whitelaw, Geoffrey Howe, and others now join the fray. But for what it's worth, when the dust has settled, I think we'll find that Mrs. Thatcher's our man.
To me, it's like a dream that the next name in the line, Harold Macmillan, Alec Douglas Hume, and Edward Heath, is Margaret Thatcher. Each has brought his own style of leadership and stamp of greatness to the task. I shall take on the work with humility and dedication.
Tuesday, 27 November 1990. I spent a long day at Shepperton making the Bird's Eye waffle commercial. 8 hours to shoot 30 seconds. In the real world, Mrs. Thatcher is now backing John Major. I'm backing Douglas Hurd. In the world of Bird's Eye waffles, no one seems the least bit interested in who our next Prime Minister is going to be. Later. The result is in. Major, 185. Heseltine, 131. Hurd, 56. John Major becomes the youngest Prime Minister since Lord Rosebery in 1894, and Michelle tells me that my man coming in last is a useful indication of the reliability of my political instincts.
In the past week, we have seen openly and publicly the uniting of the Conservative Party. I would like to express again my thanks to all members of the party, and particularly Douglas Hurd and Michael Heseltine, for the enormous contributions they have made during the leadership contest to ensure that the party can remain united for the future.
Tuesday, 31 March 1992. I am the candidate in the city of Chester, and this morning Mr. Major brought his soapbox to Chester, and it was a triumph. Equipped with a loudhailer, I stood on a bench in the drizzle and addressed the multitude. This is as close as I get to Agincourt. I don't think anyone was listening, but it was fun. Major then clambered onto the soapbox and made a proper speech. All straightforward stuff, no great rhetoric, but somehow phenomenal. Here was the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom on a soapbox in the rain, telling 2,000 of the people of Chester what he wanted to do for his country. It worked a treat.
I promise you this, wherever I go between now and April the 9th, this soapbox is coming with me.
Friday, 10 April 1992. I am now the Member of Parliament for the City of Chester. Tuesday, 13 June 1995. I've just seen the PM. He looks quite ghastly, poor man. He's going to Canada for the G7 summit, and while he's away, the plotting will start in earnest. Thursday, 22 June 1995. Mr. Major has outflanked them all. It's quite extraordinary. The PM has resigned as leader of the Conservative Party. Rather than wait for the inevitable challenge in November, he has forced the issue. The election will be on Tuesday week.
The Conservative Party must make its choice. Every leader is leader only with the support of his party. That is true of me as well. That is why I'm no longer prepared to tolerate the present situation. In short, it is time to put up or shut up.
Monday, 3 July 1995. The evening before the party election, I wandered along to the smoking room in search of company. In came Archie Hamilton. He lighted on me. Go through now to the dining room. Keep the PM company. He's on his own. My heart sank. Making small talk with Mr. Major is never easy. I found him gazing blankly into the middle distance. He looked pasty-faced and weary. I think it's going pretty well, I said. Do you? Do you? He shook his head. I just don't know. I just don't know. Silence fell. I thought, poor sod, this could be his last night as Prime Minister and he's spending it with me like this. And then a gallant knight rode to the rescue. In came the Right Honourable Peter Brook. He looked across at the PM and said he had just finished reading an article about a certain Surrey cricketer whose heyday was in the 1930s. The name meant nothing to me, but the PM brightened at once and the pall that had engulfed the table lifted, and Peter and the PM talked cricket. Tonight, no question, Peter served his Prime Minister well. I knew I'd been useless. I sat in silent admiration.
For John Major, 218. For John Redwood, 89. Abstained, 8. Spoilt, 12. I declare John Major elected.
Tuesday, 4 July 1995. He's done it. I've just been on the radio hailing it as a resounding victory, the defining moment when we put our divisions behind us. The truth is, it's good enough, just. It allows the PM to carry on, but it shows the world that at least a third of the parliamentary party don't support him.
I have received the largest share of votes that any Conservative leadership candidate has received in any seriously contested election. I believe that has put to rest any question and any speculation about the leadership of the Conservative Party up to and beyond the next general election.
Friday, 2 May 1997. Major has gone, and with some dignity. Mr. Blair has arrived, and already the messianic fervour is a little too rich for my taste. And as for Cherie... Wednesday, 7 June 2000. On Monday, I went to Downing Street to see Alastair Campbell. He was in fine effing form. There was a lovely baby picture of the Blair's little boy Leo pinned to his office wall. I admired it. Alastair said, "Take it. I don't want a picture of an effing baby on the wall. Take it." He pulled the picture off the wall and gave it to me, laughing. "How are things?" I asked. "Effing dreadful," he said. "Tony's got to speak to the massed ranks of the WI on Wednesday. The W-effing I." "They'll love him," I said. "They're a good crowd." "You're speaking too?" asked Alistair. "I am," I said. And I was. Yes, today, Tony Blair and I addressed the triennial general meeting of the National Federation of Women's Institutes at Wembley Arena. Mine's the speech you didn't hear about. I'm relieved to report it went down fairly well. And this is the point. The occasion could have, should have worked for Tony too.
When I look at some of the things too that we've had to tackle in government... Oh, right. Okay. You win, I give in. I'm not saying any more about that.
As soon as Mr. Blair had spoken, he was whisked back to Westminster for Prime Minister's questions. As soon as I'd done my turn, I slipped away too. I travelled back into London by underground, and on the train found myself seated behind two hatchet-faced WI ladies of riper years. One of them said with relish, "Tony Blair was a disgrace. I'm glad we gave him the slow handclap." Her friend nodded and then said, not knowing I was there, "But wasn't Giles Brandreth wonderful?" "Yes," said the other one, "he was very good. But then he's a failure, isn't he? When Mr. Blair's lost the election, we'll have him back and love him to bits." And the pair of them laughed like drains.
Look out, old Mackie is back.